From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Now, it's Google coming for your cell phone with a new software platform called Android and a vision of the web and Google Ads in everyone's hands all the time. 5 minutes ago, it seems, it was Apple's iPhone that had the buzz. Now, Google wants to let everyone write software and speak through that chirp in your pocket. This hour, On Point, Google goes after the cell phone. Joining me first today from San Francisco is Kevin Delaney. He covers Google for the Wall Street Journal. Kevin, thanks for being with us. What is Google up to here?
Hi, Tom. Well, Google has assembled this sort of coalition of the willing. It's a bunch of handset makers and wireless carriers. And together they're putting out this thing called Android. And it's basically the software that powers the guts of your phone. It's the operating system. It's a browser. It's a bunch of other stuff. And Google's main vision is to make it easier for you to be able to access the sort of things you do on the web, on your PC, on your phone, and to be able to do that with relatively low-cost phones.
So they've got Sprint and T-Mobile and Motorola and Samsung. And why is this such a big deal? Is it it's just another phone, a G phone, a Google phone? Why are people in such a tizzy about it?
Well, the reason that this is so, you know, radical, if you will, is that the cellular operators have for years controlled what gets on your phone. And they do this by having to approve the sort of applications, the software that runs on your phone. Sometimes the browsers don't work particularly well. They wanted to control things so they could do stuff like sell you ringtones because they've seen revenue opportunities in kind of limiting your access to things on the phone and making you go through them.
You're talking Verizon or AT&T or whoever gets the phone to you.
Yeah, exactly. Whoever gets the phone has really controlled what the consumer has seen on the phone. There are some exceptions to that, but that's been the general trend. What's interesting about Android, this Google-led initiative, is that it's proposing to make the phone much more open. And so that you can start your phone, you can use your web browser, you boot it up, and you can do basically anything you can do on the web. And it's a web browser, the software to access the web. It uses some of the same technology as the browser in the iPhone from Apple. And that's gotten a lot of raves for providing a really good browsing experience on a phone.
Well, what about that? There's the iPhone. It's got that very sexy, glossy screen. Turn it this way, turn it that way. It turns with you. You know, use your touch screen, fingers, and all the rest. Can Google really offer something better than that?
Well, what Google is hoping is that there's not one iPhone or one G phone, but there are thousands of Google phones. And what they've done is this coalition that they've assembled of handset makers and carriers, the purpose of that is to get these guys making lots of phones. And so some of these phones probably will look a lot like an iPhone with a touch screen and that sort of thing. Some of them might look more like a classic cell phone. Google said the software actually works on pretty much any modern cell phone. And so there's going to be lots of different kinds of phones. And some of them will be similar, I think, to what the iPhone looks like. One difference is that they might be cheaper.
Because Google has ads with it, and ads would subsidize the phone.
Well, there's two things. One, the Android software is going to be free. So that Google estimates about 10% of the cost of a phone is the software. So you take away that 10%. And on top of it, Google is going to get ad revenue from your browsing the web on your phone. And they've said that they're going to share that with the carriers, the Verizons or the T-Mobiles or the Sprints. And the carriers can use that to subsidize the phone further or cut what they charge you on your monthly cellular bill.
Why is this so important in business terms for Google? It seems like they've got a lot going on already. Why does the gizmo in your hand matter to them?
Well, Google CEO Eric Schmidt has said advertisements on mobile phones is the single biggest opportunity ahead of them. And the way they figure that out is they're very mathematically oriented. So there's something like 3 billion mobile phones out there in the world. There are a lot fewer PCs. And so they think they have this incredibly good business on people accessing the web from their PCs. If they can bring a fraction of that business to mobile phones, showing people ads on their mobile phones, that really could bring a lot of growth for the company.
And what does it mean for the competition in the tech market here? This is being described as a profound challenge to Microsoft. How does a profound challenge to Microsoft rise out of some new software for a cell phone?
Well, Google is challenging Microsoft in a lot of different fronts, but it's important to note that there are existing software platforms for phones, and one of them is the Windows Mobile platform that Microsoft has been working on for years that is actually on a lot of phones. T-Mobile is coming out with this this phone and has some phones that use that software. And so it's definitely a frontal competition between Google and Microsoft in this area. The competition between Google and Microsoft stretches very broadly at this point. Over the past year or so, Google has gotten into offering online word processing and spreadsheets and PowerPoint-like services. So this is, you know, a really, really broad competition between the two of them.
And what does it mean for the desktop computer? Can it really be that the center of computing and Internet access might move away from that nice, big, stationary screen on your desk and into that tiny little screen in your hand?
I don't think it's going to move away. You know, I think for a lot of people, they're going to have both experiences. It'll be easier, probably, for people to go from one to the other. Right now, you have your browsing experience on your desktop computer, and then you go to your phone, and none of what you've done on your desktop computer is actually transferred to your phone. So if you're working on a document, if you're communicating with friends, if you have your calendar, there's a divide for most people between what their experience on the two. That divide will probably go away to some degree as the web powers more of what you do on your desktop in terms of word processing and calendars and things like that, and on your phone. So you should be able to access your documents anywhere more easily, coordinate your calendars, your friends, communicate from your phone more easily. But the reality is that the phone is really the dominant and potentially the dominant means for people to access the Internet when you take a global view. And there are lots of countries where people don't have as many PCs, where the PCs haven't penetrated the market as much as the U.S. And this is going to be really important there.
Google says it's going to show us something of that software next week, but when might consumers have Google-powered phones in their hands, Kevin?
You're going to have to wait a while for that. So there's these lead times with the industry to build phones and such. Probably second half of 2008 is the first time any consumer is going to be able to go out and buy a phone that's powered by the Google software.
Kevin Delaney, thanks for beginning to lift the curtain on this for us. Thanks very much.
Sure. Thank you, Tom.
Kevin Delaney, senior writer for the Wall Street Journal. He covers Google from San Francisco. Joining me now from Washington is Rob Peguero, personal technology columnist for the Washington Post. His column is Fast Forward. His blog for the paper is Faster Forward. Rob Peguero, welcome back. Good to have you.
Thanks. Glad to be back.
So, gosh, you know, every time one of these things gets unveiled, there's all this ink about it in the tech press. Is this an earthquake? Is it a big deal? Is it maybe a big deal? How do you look at it?
If it's an earthquake, it's one that's going to take a long time to shake itself out.
Okay.
What we have here is a project that, in a certain sense, you'll see what this phone is supposed to look like next week when this preview software comes out.
Mm-hmm.
But then people have to take the software. Manufacturers and carriers, because it is what they call open source, they can customize it all they want. So it might not actually look or work entirely the way Google wants it to. And then they have to put it into phones that you'll have in stores, you know, basically second half of next year.
So we'll look at open source and what that might mean for what we can do on our cell phones. But what about the basic idea of the cell phone, the little thing in your hand, even if it's a bigger thing like a BlackBerry, but of that handset becoming, you know, personal centers for computing and Internet access? Do you see that as taking the momentum off the desktop? Are we all going to be computing and Interneting on the road all the time?
I don't think it takes away from the desktop. It just means, put it this way, it's going to be ever harder to get away from the Internet in your email and all the other things that you could usually abandon just by stepping away from the keyboard.
As these kind of smartphones become more common, whether it's Apple or the G phone, the Google phone, what might we be able to do on the hoof that we can't do now?
Well, to give you one example of something that you can do somewhat well now, but with a little bit of tinkering, just think of keeping your schedule straight. You know, I've got a Palm smartphone, and it synchronizes to my computer. I can change the calendar on that. But for people to know what I've changed on my calendar, I would need to go to the mobile version of Google Calendar, update that with my info, and then they would have to go to the Google Calendar site and see, okay, Rob is having lunch at this place. Well, suppose you had some sort of synchronization going on automatically. Google certainly has the tools to do that, and if it makes the phone software, that would be easier to do. That's one example. I don't know that Android will necessarily work like that, but it could.
And paint the picture on out, Rob. I mean, we hit with GPS in these devices and the full web accessible here and all the kinds of services we're talking about. I mean, is this going to be sort of our auxiliary brain running around with us, pointing out where our pals are and what's for sale here and there and, you know, chirping up at us to go into McDonald's and have a Big Mac? We really need it right now?
That's the upside and the downside in one. You could say, essentially, if you had a cell phone that provided good internet access on a par with what your desktop can do, you would have, to use a phrase that's has a bad reputation these days, total information awareness.
Yikes.
You know, anything you wanted to know, you would know. The downside is, you know, you could never just, it'd be that much harder to do nothing.
Just
to be in peace and quiet.
Just feeling groovy won't be enough. We're all going to be wired.
You have to remember where the off button is on the phone.
Yeah. We're joined as well right now from Pittsburgh by R. Ravi. He's Associate Dean of Intellectual Strategy at Carnegie Mellon's Tepper School of Business, Professor of Computer Science. R. Ravi, thanks very much for joining us.
Hi, Tom.
Big deal or incremental?
Somewhere in between is where I'd put it.
If Google has its way, if Google's vision, envelops us all, how's it going to feel different for Americans, global citizens, interacting with each other and their whatever's sitting in their hand?
Well, I believe that this is going to be a disruption, but it's going to take a long time coming. In particular, I think our phones that come from different carriers or operators are all going to start melding into one phone, into one format that's going to offer us a variety of services that we have not seen before, including poking around our social neighbors and trying to access product information when we are shopping and the like.
Well, flesh that out for us. They call the software Android. I mean, the suggestion there is, you know, that we've got a kind of a smart robot at our disposal. That doesn't sound quite like a cell phone. So
right. It's actually a really bad name, I think. What is being offered now is a software stack. And it's called a stack because at the bottom of the stack are the pieces of code that communicate with the hardware functionalities of the phone. For example, opening up the camera, taking a picture, calling a particular number.
Yeah, the basic guts of it.
Basic guts of it. And then above it, there is a middle layer which takes instructions from programs that, geeks can write that will enable them to do interesting and innovative things and convert those instructions from these programs into commands that the basic guts will then implement. So they are giving you the whole stack, the basic guts, the middleware that will do the translation, as well as a user interface that will allow different people to see what kinds of programs are installed in there, what else they can install, and finally, hooks for people to write innovative new programs on top of this whole layer. And they're going to make the whole thing public, and they're going to make it available under a specific kind of open software license, which is going to allow creative developers to make new versions of programs and incorporate some new twists and then not release the new twisted versions out. So this is a particularly commercial-friendly license, open software license,
right,
under which they're offering this under.
We'll look again at what that may mean, but in this stack then, if anybody can sort of arrange to get anything in there, I can pile in whatever I want. I wish you'd make a little more real for us, R. Ravi, what that might mean. You spoke just glancingly of social interactions, of shopping. Can you kind of flesh out in virtual terms, what would that mean?
Right. Let's think of a couple of scenarios. Someone writes a program that looks at the addresses and of all the people in your contact list.
Okay.
And as you're traveling around the country, when you come within, say, 50 miles of someone in your contact list, the program alerts you of this vicinity. And maybe it's even more advanced that it actually is able to garner the location of this cell phone that this person is holding. So even though you may not be 50 miles from the address of this person, you may be within 50 miles of where the other person's phone is located.
Now, this sounds kind of cool, but kind of spooky. I mean, you know, hey, Bobby McGee is around the corner. I'd love to see him. Hey, Bobby McGee is in my bathroom.
My yeah.
What's up?
Here's another application. You're out shopping in a big mall, and you find a product that you really like, but you have a suspicion that the product might be overpriced. What about a little program that you can go in and type the name of the product, and it tells you exactly how much this product is available for in other stores in the neighborhood, in other stores on the Internet?
I think you can already do that in Japan, sort of wave it over the barcode and see something about the world of products.
Actually, I think Google already has a service where you can message in the name of a product, and it'll come back with the top three listings of the best available products in the Internet. So it already exists. And here you can see what Google is trying to do. It's trying to take all of these widgets that it is available on the web and try to nudge it ever so slightly without being intrusive into the mobile platform.
Rob Pigorero, what's your level of confidence, or how do you assess Google's position here? Is it positioned to do this better, more quickly, more deeply than its competitors, Apple or Microsoft or the guys at BlackBerry, with its open source sort of free-for-all of software developers here and the rest of what Google offers, or not?
Well, that's the key element. It's not just Google. I think based on what Google's done, they know how to do a simple and a powerful interface to something like email. Look at how Gmail, there's so many ways you can organize your messages, but it's not intimidating to start using it. Or look at Google Maps, which, you know, is, I don't think I'll ever buy a map program when I can just use that site.
Sure.
On the other hand, Google has no experience building cell phones, so they've brought these other companies in. It's not quite a free-for-all. They say they're still essentially the conductor of the orchestra. They're leading the symphony, but they've brought in people who have spent a lot of time developing cell phones, like Samsung, Motorola, LG, Qualcomm, wireless carriers around the world. So it's not just them. And at a certain point, you are going to see contributions from other people who've taken a look at the Android source code, said, this is interesting, but I think there's a better way to do this function. Let's try plugging in this bit of code instead.
So real competition, but Google now putting its weight behind, pushing much more of the web into our hands. Rob, R. Ravi, please stand by. A lot of listeners want to join us. Let's go to Heather in Peabody, Massachusetts. Hi, Heather.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What do you know?
Well, the first that I heard of this technology, I wondered how it was going to affect my job, because I work as a remote concierge for Mercedes-Benz, and we're sort of the connection to the Internet for, you know, our customers.
Now, that's not a service I have the pleasure of using. How's it work, Heather?
Well, they push the button in the car, and we give them directions. The first question they ask a lot is, can you see where I am? And they want to know restaurants, things in the area close to them, where they are, and directions and stuff like that.
So whether, your question is your job on the line here?
Well, it makes me wonder, and it was a concern that I first brought up when I was interviewed, and the interviewer just kind of laughed at me.
Yeah.
You know, I said, are you concerned about, you know, the technology that's out there now? And he said, it's not really a concern for our customers.
Well, who's laughing now, we wonder? Or maybe it all just becomes part of the car. Ravi, what about it? Is Heather going to be out of a job if everybody's got all that power right in their handset?
I'm afraid we are moving that way here.
Sorry, Heather.
The widgets that, one of the simple widgets that would be possible for developers to build will be exactly these kind of location-aware services, where they can direct mobile users to services of the type they want near their geographic locations. And from my understanding, this is exactly what Heather is doing for them right now.
Rob, what other kinds of services here? So I might find the cheapest version of whatever it is that I want to buy. I might find out which of the friends plugged in as my social network are within some radius of me and where. What else is looming out there, Google or otherwise, on that front?
Well, think about it in terms of that way. What can you do already if you're sitting in front of your computer at home, your laptop or your desktop? Now imagine you can do that in a device that, unlike your computer at home, knows where it is because it has some level of GPS capability. So, for instance, if you're looking for directions, that's the easy one. It would be like GPS in a car. You don't have to tell your car, I'm at the intersection of Commonwealth Avenue and whatever. It knows you're there. You just tell where you want to go.
I meet somebody whose name I should know, but I don't remember. Are they going to be able to read his or her cell phone and flash it up on my screen?
Hopefully only if they've set their phone to work that way. You know, you want to make sure it's easy to think of interesting and fun ways to share information in a universe where there are no bad people or hackers.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, we don't live in that universe, so you have to make sure that things are secure by default before you start adding in all these interesting extra features.
And this is one area that's come up, Ravi, the issue of security in an open source system where anybody can write software for this. Can Google keep this secure with all the potential applications here about who's where doing what?
Yes, I want to actually make a distinction between security and privacy.
Okay.
Security is trying to keep your phone safe against viruses and hackers and other malicious programs that try to hijack the information from your phone and perhaps use it for their own benefit or try to bring down other cell phones, sort of a snowballing hijacking experience. I think open source efforts are in some ways better positioned to address such security concerns, because even though the platform on which this whole program rests is open, as soon as someone discovers a vulnerability, there is also a horde of people looking at it carefully and trying to fix it. Perhaps it may be the technical nature of the platform that also prevents hackers from getting access to it. So I'm less worried about the security aspect. What I'm actually more worried about is the privacy settings and how much control the user and the carriers will have to exercise over that. For example, will I be in a position when I use one of these phones to not allow a friend who is coming nearby to know that I'm in the vicinity? Will I be in a position not to let my location be transmitted to all the third-party developers who want to use that and monetize that?
Or for that matter, whether Google will know it, because Google could have an interest in advertising to you the thing that's just around the corner or right in front of you.
Absolutely. And I think there is also a slightly tangential aspect of how much of your audio content do you want to let other people mine. For instance, one of the partners that Google has signed up in this alliance is one that analyzes speech and also tries to do voice-based search. So that means that there is an intent here to try to monitor the conversation, perhaps not for total intent, but still for keywords, and then try to find out the intent of the user and have targeted advertising.
Holy moly. So now Bobby McGee is in my house, and I know he's nervous or something. I'm reading his voice. I mean, it gets the plot really thickens here. Let's get some more listeners. Joe, you're calling from Sharon, Massachusetts, and you're on the air, Joe.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Tom, I wanted to call because I am a beneficiary of kind of Microsoft's best effort to date on this. I'm running Windows on my Trio 750. I've got Exchange server running in the office, not to get too geeky.
Right, but your handset is all powered up already.
Yeah, my cell phone's talking to my office. If I book an appointment, that appointment shows up in the office. The people I want to see it know I'm busy then.
Right.
My emails, if I read them on the cell phone, they show red in the office and vice versa. And it's really great at one level in terms of it does what I want it to do. But I find myself cursing, you know, multiple times a day at this phone because it forgets that first and foremost it's a phone. I like the other stuff. And so my point is, and I'd like to hear your panel discuss it, is, you know, at the end of the day, these are cell phones. And, you know, this thing will cost. I'll be dialing a phone number. It interrupts me to tell me that I've got new voicemail or a text message. You know, It's like having, you know, a computer, and I wonder if at the end of the day the winner of this battle is going to be the one that remembers it.
The
people
one,
really first and foremost want a phone, and the other stuff is all add-on.
I'm sure that's not what Google wants to hear right now, Joe, but I understand exactly what you're saying. Rob Peguerrero, what about it? Are people going to want all this at their fingertips all the time, or just a way to phone home?
I don't think people want to be on the internet all the time. At least in my experience, what I want is simply when I need to get some bit of data off the internet, I want to be able to do it as easily and quickly as possible and then go back to doing whatever with the phone, which most of the time is having it sitting in my pocket doing nothing,
yeah,
waiting for a call. And again, this goes back to, you know, can you get the user interface right? That is going to be more important than any of the stuff on the inside of Android, more important than the fact that it's open source and anyone can look at it and edit and improve the code. You have to make it easy and simple to use, because people will have a hard enough time reading the manuals for new TVs or computers for phones. No, it's something we've used all our lives. We think we know how to use it. We should know how to use it. You shouldn't require extra training, and that's where a lot of smartphones I've tried have gone wrong. You know, one test I like to do is how many times do you have to press buttons or tap the screen to turn off the ringer?
Yeah, Yeah, right. 16 levels down, and you're swearing by the time it goes off. Our Ravi, there's the interface issue here. But Joe, our caller, in a way is raising something else as well. I mean, we know how this works. Once you've got that capacity in your pocket, in your cell phone, it tends to reach out and require that people, one way or another, pay attention to it. I mean, do you think human psychology is going to welcome this Android in the phone?
Well, I think this also brings up another important distinction, I think, between cell phone users in the U.S. and elsewhere. I think from the trends we have seen, cell phone users in the U.S. like to use the phone as a tool, mainly to reach someone by voice. Whereas in other countries, you see people using the cell phone as really a lifestyle device, trying to network, trying to listen to music, and you see this plethora of new dimensions added to the phone. Now, I think Google's play here is not mainly for the business customer. That path has been well-worn. Mm-hmm. We have the BlackBerries, we have the Windows Exchange servers.
Trio,
but I think
all the
what
rest,
Google
yep.
is trying to do here is trying to make the simple applications that one might want to access occasionally easily available without having to start up this big browser or having to go through some large overhead.
And what about the ads? How do they expect to deliver those? I mean, when and in what circumstance would an ad show up on your cell phone screen?
Well, I don't really have a clear idea about that since the software kit is not yet released.
Right.
I think I have a feeling there's definitely going to be audio ads that are going to be mined out of conversations. And maybe some of these ads are going to be revenue shared with the carriers.
No, wait a minute. Right there. Audio ads mined out of conversation. In other words, they're listening to my conversation. They hear me say I'm hungry, and suddenly a voice floats in that says, Big Mac.
I don't think it'll actually pop up in the middle of your conversations, but it might actually pop up in the beginning when you're trying to call someone, or towards the end when you're finished calling up someone.
Rob, are people going to put up with that?
I don't know if they'll have to. At the press conference, this conference call they had on Monday, mm-hmm. Google and the other people in the Open Handset Alliance, they talked a good deal about that. They're not trying to make something they're not trying to make a phone that is paid for solely by ads.
But they're definitely trying to make money off of ads on these phones.
But think about how Google does it already. It's not just the ads you see in response to a Google search. It's ads that Google sells elsewhere. They're making tons of money. Essentially, Google's got themselves in this very nice position where as long as more people keep getting on the Internet, they keep making more money.
Sam's calling from Beaufort, North Carolina. Hi, Sam. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom and Gus. A quick comment and a question.
Great.
The comment is that I don't think speech recognition is at a point where they would want to, where advertisers would want to depend on it, because it's so poor that you would get irritating ads that would only turn you against the product. I mean, it's one thing to, announce a few digits. That's easy to understand, but open free conversation, you really can't do well on it.
You mean the idea of some Google computer listening in and then giving me an ad related to my conversation?
It would be a loser right now, I think, with the state of the art. But that's a comment, and
okay,
they can respond
yep.
to it. The question I have is, it seems to me the biggest thing here is Apple just came out with an iPhone that was closed, and your guests probably know better than I, the reaction to people unlocking and what they've had to do.
You mean closed in terms of the software it can accept and use?
Correct.
It's all locked up. People have tampered with it, yeah.
Right. And so the big issue to me is how open it is. Like, is it a Linux type of thing, or is it an Apple model? Because if it's totally open, then I would expect that unintended evolution consequences would,
right.
It's wonderful, but it would take it to places where I don't know if Google would actually be able to control it. So I'm just wondering if people could comment. For example, you could block out the ads, you could do who knows what. So I wonder if your guests could comment on the issue of the Linux versus Apple kind of view on it.
Sam, stick with us for a second. You're a software developer yourself?
Yes.
And R. Ravi, Sam imagines that if it's really open, sort of Linux-style open, Google has no idea what this little device could become.
That's right. So this is a Linux-based platform. So the basic kernel is actually going to be a Linux kernel.
Mm-hmm.
And the license that they're offering it under is what's called the Apache version 2 license.
Right.
And that allows developers to innovate on the basic features, but then not have to bring back the innovated features into the open source again, thereby keeping some of these features proprietary and thereby discouraging people from hacking into it.
So there's a kind of software center of gravity here that all the add-ons won't affect?
That's sort of true, right? There is the basic stuff that is open, and then there is the stuff that's built on top of it that people can commercialize and not make open. So I think this is the way that Google is trying to expose all the basic functionality out to everyone. But then for those that want to build on top of it and maybe disable some along the way, they won't really have to expose that to the open community.
Sam, you're a software developer. Are you confident that Google will be able to kind of keep a handle on what this is, protecting that core function?
Actually, I'm sort of asking the flip question. He's saying that people will be able to put something out there that they can encapsulate in a way. But the question is Google really going to allow open to freedom? If I have a revenue, for example, people sometimes develop stuff that asks $5 contributions, whatever.
Yeah.
So if I have literally an idea for some commercial service, will I be able to install it over their kernel and actually make my own money on it?
Ravi?
I actually don't know the answer to that question. I think that is what Google is saying when it says that it wants to revenue share with developers. Now, the third pillar here is the carriers. How much of this are the carriers going to benefit from? And I think that's what they negotiate in the process is going to have a lot to bear on how much of the revenue can actually be shared with the developer. I actually don't know the answer to that question.
Sam, as a developer, is this an attractive challenge, proposition, platform for you?
Tune in next year. But one final question.
Yeah.
It sounds like this is sort of with DVD formats and a lot of where you have technological breakthroughs where I think everybody's going to watch and fall behind. This is easily available to all the other players. So I guess the issue is going to be one of very quick commercial standards, potentially legal issues, who knows what. There's going to be a whole storm on this, I mean, between carriers, people like Google developers, and independent developers.
It's a big rock in the pond. And Sam, in Beaufort, North Carolina, we appreciate your call. Let's get one from Andy in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Andy, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi, Tom. It's Andy Lippman with the MIT Media Lab.
Oh, hi.
I agree with Sam, and I think with most of your speakers, but I think you have to broaden the issue a lot.
Please.
You see, right now, Google's not the only way that you can get to the Internet or get any services on your PC.
That's for sure.
But the carrier is the only way that you can get to any kind of service, be they interesting, uninteresting, invasive or not.
You mean Verizon, AT&T, but they have carriers who have signed up. Sprint is with them, T-Mobile's with them, so...
Sure, they have, but those are the carriers that probably are the more visionary ones. The point is here is that suddenly with an open device like that, that's potentially able to use more than one network, the monopoly on services is now broken and doesn't have to only come from the carrier, but can come from the users, from the community, among people, as well as through the person that you might have a subscription from. That's a very deep and fundamental change to the way cellular telephony has worked in the United States.
Why does it matter? Does it make Google a phone company? What happens when that gets broken open, if it gets broken open?
Well, I think what it does is it suddenly means that the device, which has been a slave to the network since its inception, is now something that becomes much more the core and the center of the network, and lots of people can become service inventors and providers besides the carrier themselves. And Google is in a preeminent position to capitalize on that, as they are in a preeminent position with the Internet, but that thwarts a lot of the very centralized plans that carriers have had for the future of telephony for a while.
So, I mean, that's a reason I suppose Verizon and AT&T haven't signed on here. Rob Pegoraro, you're in Washington. Does this mean that Google and those in its group here suddenly become bigger targets for regulation or oversight by, you know, the FCC and all that?
I doubt that. If anything, you know, if you want to see more competition and more innovation in the cell phone industry, which I think it does need, you want something like Android to happen. Because right now, we put it this way, the cell phone market is fundamentally broken because these phones are not actually designed for exactly what the customer wants.
Right.
They're designed for what the carriers want.
Mm-hmm.
So Motorola designed something. They present it to Verizon or AT&T. Verizon says, well, we like that, but can you remove this feature? We don't want to make it too easy to get your pictures off the phone, which they really have done. AT&T will say, how about this? We don't want the user to be able to put in some other service's subscriber card in this. We want it to be locked to our service for at least the first 2 years. And you know, look at another example of that, cable boxes. They're not designed for you or me. They're designed for what Comcast thinks you or I want.
Right.
So in this case, if you have a market where the phone is made for what you and I actually want, that's huge progress. That's making it more like a functioning market, if you will.
Andy, at MIT's Media Lab, is this an exciting prospect to you, or do you see it differently somehow?
I think it's not just exciting, but I think it's going to happen a lot faster than your speakers say. The iPhone sort of broke the back on that because it's intractably hackable. It's just not going to be closed. Look, when you and I were young, we bought a television set that had an antenna, and we could take that TV set home and tune in any channel we wanted.
Yep.
It didn't come with a subscription to CBS the way your phone does now.
Mm-hmm.
To change that model is pretty fundamental to the way telephony works, and I think opens the door for a whole lot of options that we're just seeing the tip of the iceberg with. And I'm not as worried about whether they're invasions of privacy, because the ones that catch on will, and the ones that people don't resonate with will simply wither away. But they haven't had the option to do that yet, and that's going to change very quickly. Society moves very quickly in these areas. Look how quickly YouTube took off.
Yeah, sure.
This is not years, and the threat of it is sufficient to change the model that the carriers have going forward.
Sounds like you're selling your Verizon stock, Andy. I don't know about the privacy question. That's still an open one for me, but thanks for calling. Let's get a call from San Francisco. Dean, San Francisco, California. Hi, Dean.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I think Andy has an interesting point about the breaking the stranglehold of the carriers. But in order for this to really take off, I think there's a piece that we've touched on just a little bit, but have missed mostly, which is the user interface. So cell phones are increasingly becoming computer electronic devices, or consumer electronic devices.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm a technologist. I don't mind having to work around bad interfaces occasionally and hack things to get them to work. But to sell them to millions and millions of people, they have to be dead simple and very convenient to use. And that's something the Apple guys have gotten really right, first with the iPod and now with the iPhone.
So can Google and its partners do better than Apple on that? And if Apple's as far as it can go, what difference does Google make on that front?
Well, I think that's the big challenge, right? These carriers and these cell phone manufacturers traditionally haven't been that great at designing good user interfaces. And frankly, the open source community also hasn't been that great at it, which is why you don't see Linux on 50 million desktops in the United States.
Yeah.
So I think the first side is interesting, but in order to be successful, they have to figure out how to concentrate on the user interface and design something that is really intuitive.
Dean, we've got it. Rob, do you see a big opportunity there, and do you see Google and its partners as the ones who can take advantage of it?
I think so. Opportunity is the big word. Remember, the iPhone, Apple has chosen to make that tied to only one network, AT&T, and that doesn't work for a lot of people. I mean, there's entire states, I believe, Vermont, AT&T will not sell you an iPhone under any condition because you'd have to use it under roaming with someone else. It would cost them too much.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one opportunity right there. Second of all, it is possible for an open source product to get the interface right. Linux may not be the best example, although that's gotten much better. But look at the Firefox web browser, something that going from out of nowhere against a product that is already installed on every single copy of Windows has gotten something like 20% of the market.
So that's big action in a hurry. Ravi, I can still imagine people thinking, you know, whatever it is, it's going to be a little tiny screen. How wonderful can the interface ultimately become? Apple's got it pretty sexy, but still, it's just that little deck of cards in your hand.
Right, but notice that Google's popularity stems from the minimalism and the simplicity of its user interface. That's how Google got famous in the first place, in addition to the fact that it had the best web searches. So I think we are looking at a company which has expertise in exactly this area. And just to add to Dean's point, I really think that the main customer pain point that this whole effort is addressing is the usability of smartphones. And what Google is trying to do is to break through that barrier and, as the person from the Media Lab said, try to breed a lot of new innovation from a lot of different developers around the world and try to use its well-worn strategy of monetizing user intent when people get online without being overly intrusive.
Monetizing user intent, meaning they figure out what you want and help you get it. That's an ad.
Exactly, yeah. Or where you are, or where your friends are, or whatever it is that you're trying to accomplish using your smartphone. And try not to be very intrusive about it. So I don't think the space of the screen is going to be a big barrier here.
Mm. Yeah. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Let's go to Laura calling from Jamesport, Long Island. Hi, Laura. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
The thing that concerns me about this very much is that when I read George Orwell's 1984 and imagine Big Brother, you know, being able to watch our every move, I sort of anticipated it being something forced on us. And now I see that it's something that people are willing to give up their freedom, their privacy. And to me, it's Big Brother.
And of course, as I recall, Big Brother was at least glued to the wall, those screens. But why do you see it that way, Laura, instead of, a liberating empowerment with all this information in your hand?
Because of the privacy issue. If I don't see that it's at all liberating to not have control over who is able to know what I'm doing at any given time. They've already had things on, primetime mainstream TV where they're showing that people, collection agencies or ex-husbands who are trying to monitor their wives, they've been able to plug in through a virus or through some kind of software, and they're able to be watching this person's every move. If that's not Big Brother, I care much more about my privacy and my freedom. This seems like we're just handing it away.
Laura, we've got it. You put it you put it very pointedly. R. Ravi, you hear that concern. What do you say to it?
Well, I think it's that same comment you made about how easy is it to find the turn the ringer off switch. I think they need to build in enough of a user interface that allows Laura and others like them to just turn off all of these services and be very simple and open about it. I think that's going to be the key enabler of this technology if it's going to take off at all.
Rob, first, will Google be willing to make that button easily accessible? Because that will mean they can't, shove you that ad relevant to where you're standing. And B, do you see a different generation, younger Americans, is not caring so much about this, is happy to have, the trade-off of a little privacy gone for a little more information about where their pals are?
I don't know if it's trading off or just obliviousness if you look at what people put on their MySpace and Facebook pages. I think the important thing here, we talk about Big Brother. Big Brother was, I'm pretty sure he was running closed source software, not open source. Open. You, I, anybody will be able to look at the Android source code. There can't be any hidden back doors for Google to snoop on you with because they'll be in the code. Mm-hmm. Maybe some carrier will put one on as some proprietary module. But, you'll have a choice about that. This is not – essentially, customers are going to have a built-in veto over what this phone can do. If it's too annoying, someone will write some plug-in that turns off the feature they don't like and gives them back the phone they do want. And that's something we haven't had in a cell phone before.
That is a whole lot of empowerment if you know how to grab onto it. And presumably, lots of developers will want to do that. It'll be fascinating to see how consumers respond to it. It's been fascinating just to see what's coming at us, and I'm grateful to both of you for helping us do that. Rob Perguerrero, personal technology columnist for The Washington Post. Always great to have you. Thanks for joining us today, Rob.
You're welcome.
And R. Ravi, it's good to make your acquaintance. Hope you'll come again. Associate Dean of Intellectual Strategy at Carnegie Mellon's Tepper School of Business, professor there of computer science. R. Ravi, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
Listeners, you can continue the conversation and download the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. On Point is produced by Julie Jopp, Eileen Amata, Stefano Katsonis, Hillary McQuilkin, Tanya Rally, James Ross, Karen Schiffman, and John Wibby. With help from Allison Bagg and Noah Hertz-Bunzel, our senior producer is Wen Stevenson. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.